Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your hosts, Jenny.
Nobody. And me. There's only one person allowed to call me Jenny.
Who's that?
In this universe, and that's Jack Harrison.
Oh, okay.
I only let him because he's a stuntman and he's 6'6 and he'll beat me up.
Was he the one that played Bigfoot?
Yes, he was.
In I forget the name of the movie.
Okay, so the movie was called Savage. It was produced by Fear Makers, who are horror film.
Horror?
Production company.
Okay.
Or film company. Yeah, so he was in the creature suit. And the funny thing is, we're in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Yep,
he
Bigfoot country.
He grew up in Meadsville, which is just north of here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so shout out to Jack Harrison, my favorite actor and stuntman.
Which
and
we
my friend.
Need to get him on the show and talk about his experience as Bigfoot.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, to be able to put that suit on. He said it was, like, very expensive and very hot. They had to wrap him in, like, cellophane to get him in it.
Really?
Yeah. So just cool. I mean, just interesting stuff you don't really think about. You know, you think about acting or stunts.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's not as glamorous as it seems. But anyways,
so
tell
we are in Butler, Pennsylvania this round.
Yes.
The doors are almost open. People are starting to flow in.
We're at the 11th annual. 11 years this
11
has been going on.
11 years this has been going on.
Yeah.
Butler Paranormal Convention.
I really like the setup of this convention.
There is. We'll actually take pictures hopefully this time and show you guys what it looks like. But we have UFOs on stage. That are
blinky.
Yeah. Probably about 25 vendors in this room,
mm-hmm.
and then in the other room they have psychics and stuff.
Yeah,
so it's cool. It's really cool. Ed Klein's here. We're going to get him on the mic hopefully later and make a regular interview for you guys.
And Stan Gordon, who's a UFO and Bigfoot researcher, he's been on a couple of the big shows.
Oh yeah,
all those kind of shows. He's got some books and videos I see at his table. I don't see him, but I see his table.
I saw him earlier. I said, "Hey."
He's probably getting coffee.
Yeah,
this is very early in the morning. But anyways, So Joe, tell everybody how long we had to drive to get to this show.
It wasn't that bad. It was only about 4 hours.
4 hours.
4 hours.
We've driven longer for sure, but interesting. You know, like. I'm a panicky rider when we go through the mountains.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, by the time we got into the hilly area,
yeah.
It was dark out, so.
Are you smelling something weird?
Yes.
Okay. Who thought it was me?
I think somebody's burning incense.
Oh, I thought maybe someone was smoking a doob or something.
No, Jen. It's healing incense.
Oh, so is weed. Not that I've ever smoked it. Okay, once with Kendra. Like 20 years ago when I didn't inhale.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, did you?
No, I didn't.
That's always the story.
I didn't, know what
I didn't
to
inhale.
Do. I didn't know. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? I'm not. Yeah. No. It's not my thing. I'd rather have a bag of chips. That makes me happy.
That's right. Give me chocolate any day.
Chips. That's my calming.
Yeah.
But anyways, Joe, so we're here. We have, once again, we're selling and raffling off our little foots.
Yes.
They're so cute. If you guys go to our Facebook page and see a picture of them, if you want one,
send us
a message.
Send us a message. We're actually selling them also.
Yep.
So check that out on our page.
Yeah.
And, let's get ready to do some interviews for you guys. And get you some great people to listen.
Stay tuned from some very,
very
cool people in the paranormal.
Cool people.
All right. We'll be back.
We'll be back in a second. Okay.
And coming to us today from the 11th Annual Butler Paranormal Fest, we have Kevin Farkas with the Social Voice Project. Welcome, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Jennifer, thanks so much for having me on, fellow podcaster.
Yes, it's
we
so
love
exciting.
That. Yes.
It's the first time we had a fellow podcaster on our podcast.
Yeah. Hey, you guys are good.
Thanks.
Really?
I've been following you guys on the Facebook and checking out what you do.
Great.
Awesome stuff.
Have you been drinking?
Thank you.
Not yet today. That starts at 5.
Just let me know when and where. I'll be there.
Yeah. We the one time in the studio, it was one of them rough nights. After doing all kinds of stuff, I brought Jen little bottles of wine.
It was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Bad
the second one, she was like, okay.
I went on and on and on and on, and Joe's like, wrap it up. My poor brother. I just torment him.
Hey, that's
what
part
Little
of the
Sisters
fun, right?
are for. But Kevin, tell us a little bit about what you do and your project and your podcast.
Yeah, so the Social Voice Project is it's a media company that's really dedicated to working in the nonprofit space or with community projects and individuals and organizations that really have that kind of focus. You know, we can go out and do car commercials and all kinds okay. of media work, and I have.
Yeah.
But I would much rather work in with projects and with people who are turning towards the community, grassroots kinds of projects and okay. things like that. So we are involved with the paranormal with a podcast, Tony Livorna's Legends and Lore podcast.
Okay.
And that's how we sort of got connected here.
Yeah.
We ended up here, and Tony's out in another room here. But yeah, so we are, you know, we look at the paranormal stuff as grassroots kind of podcasting, a grassroots local history, if you will.
Yeah.
Because every community has their local ghost story mm-hmm. and, you know, these legends, right? And the lore of that community. It's a type of local history,
yeah.
which is something that we're really into at the Social Voice Project.
And coming to these conventions, that is awesome because you get to meet the people face to face.
Yes.
And I'm telling you some awesome stories. And some of the times they were like, do you want to get on the microphone? They're like, no, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, the microphone is like the camera. You know, when you pull out so I'm a photographer too.
Yeah.
So when you pull out a camera, people get camera face right away. And so when you pull out a microphone, they get mute. You know, they just like, oh, nope, I'm not going
They're
on there.
Afraid that who's listening to this, you know?
Yes. Yes. And you know, are we live?
No, we're recording.
No, we're recording,
oh, we're recording live.
Oh, the live to tape is.
Yeah,
they
we
say.
Always say we're recording live at the.
So the pressure is off, mm-hmm. right? So we're not live. So you know, every once in a while we will do live stuff, and you know, you screw up, you really screw up. It goes out there to the world. That's why I never make a broadcaster because yeah. I screw up all the time. Yeah. So this is, you know, I have a saying to everyone I work with. I say, if you sound good, we sound good. So
That's
we
right.
have a we have an interest in making sure that you sound good.
What's your biggest challenge with your podcasting that you find?
Developing an audience. You know, the internet reaches to the world, but when you get three people who listen to a podcast episode, it makes you scratch your head and ask, you know, why is this, right? So, yeah, reaching the right audience, providing content that's, you know, resonates with people, that interests people. You know, I believe podcasting is such a wonderful personal space. You know, it's intimate. And there are no rules. I work with some people who are former broadcasters, and they just love podcasting because you can say anything you want, right?
Yeah, right.
F-bombs, you know, whatever. It all comes, you know. But this is a wonderful space to do that. But reaching people, getting the word out that, we're out there. And, you know, what's nice is that people can subscribe. You have a lot of subscribers, you know, yeah. to your podcast. So when you put out an episode, boom, they know it and then they hear it automatically. So that's half the battle,
yeah.
right? And we also find that the age thing is a little bit of a barrier. You know, a lot of youngsters are on their iPhones and their mobile devices and they're listening to podcasts. Older folks, not so much. So but that's changing, you know, podcasts.
But that's part of what we're doing is bringing the paranormal out into the podcast world. And I don't want to say older because I'm pretty old, but our age, that's what they want to listen to. They want to learn about UFOs. They want to learn about ghosts. They want to learn about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And this is a great medium to put it in their ears.
Oh, you're absolutely right about mm-hmm. that. Yeah, do you remember Art Bell?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who just passed away.
Yeah. Boy, what a following he had. Yes. You know, to do a 3-hour radio show overnight talking about the paranormal,
yeah.
so popular. So this, you know, that sort of stuff just transfers, I think, nicely to the podcast medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's yeah. great about doing conventions is people come up and they want to learn about it, like, what's a podcast?
Yeah.
And we're able to show them, like, physically go on their phone and say, all you got to do is this. And then we have new listeners. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great to be able to interact with people like that.
And what's cool, you're showing them also here at spaces like this. They get to see the microphones. There's the recorder. You know, I always say this stuff's a bit like sausage making. You know, it's messy. There are cables and stuff everywhere. You don't like to really see it made, but the end product is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really cool that people get a chance to see how this works. Mm-hmm. And if they get a chance to sit like where I am
yeah.
on the microphone with the headphones and talking to you, it's really magical. Mm-hmm. What we find mostly is that people, when they get them on, they don't want to get off. They just like it so
yes.
much. You know what I mean? You have that experience? Sure.
We've had people, they went on and on and on.
Which is great for
We're
content.
Like, thanks yeah. for coming. Well, this one time in 1967.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking about that, have you had any paranormal experiences?
Personally?
Yeah.
I have.
Okay.
I have. Want me to tell you?
Yes.
So I lived one time in the mountains of New Mexico, way up 7,000 feet on a ranch house. And I was at this big ranch house all alone. And I was walking one morning out through the front big foyer area. And I heard someone call my name as plain as you would say my name right here, Kevin. And it was so apparent that I turned around and I said, "What?" And I wasn't shocked. I wasn't freaked out. It was just like someone called my name. I was totally alone in the house. What freaks me out is I wasn't freaked out myself. And I don't I don't quite get that. But when I turned around and I said, "Whoa, wait a minute." Then I got a little wigged out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the story that I like to tell because it's I can't explain it. But what I find most fascinating is my reaction to it, you know? I mean, I don't know what that sound was, or I really don't. But wow, that was weird.
Did it sound like a male voice or female?
It was a female voice. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it was, I think it was something that just was so familiar. Like I said, I didn't even go, "Ooh, who's there?" I was like, "Oh, what?"
Yeah.
It's calm. No, it wasn't freaked out or anything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, when we investigate ghosts or hunt ghosts, I always say it's like riding a roller coaster. You're really scared when you go up the hill, but once you go down, it's like, yes,
yeah,
let's do it again.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
is interesting, the different types of reactions that people get. I know we've been on investigations where big burly men scream and run out of the room.
Really?
And you also have like your reaction where you're like, "What?" You know, but we're there calling them. We're like, "Come talk to us, come talk to us." And then when they do, we get scared, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
You know, I have to tell you, so I, working with Tony LaVorna and his podcast, I mean, this is all so new to me.
Yeah.
And I'm just really stunned at the popularity, and I'm really stunned at how serious mm-hmm. paranormal investigators and enthusiasts are.
Yeah.
Very serious. I was telling somebody the other day, you know, these aren't crackpots. These are people who legitimately, like Art Bell would say, "Show me the proof."
Yeah.
And he exactly. would say, Can't explain that, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's legitimate, you know what I mean, as opposed to like crackpots.
Yeah.
And tell you know those people.
Oh
right?
Yeah, yeah. As we develop our skills in the paranormal field, we also develop our BS meters.
BS meters,
you
I love
can tell.
It.
Yeah.
But you know, whether it happened or not, if they believe it happened, then it happened to them. And
yeah,
you know, they tell us the stories and that, and we're like, this is awesome. We love hearing the stories.
Yeah. You know, Tony said something when I first met him that, in fact, I saw him at a book fair, and it was like months and months and months later we talked about podcasting, but he said something that when I first met him at the book fair. He said, "This is really about us."
Yeah.
Ghost stories are really about us and how we respond, how we want to respond, how we sort of choose to deal with these unexplained events. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. That, you know, okay, there can be ghosts, there can be yeah. this stuff out there. But what's really interesting is like how we are, the meaning that has for us, mm-hmm. you know? My mom passed away in 2012, and she died in their bedroom, and okay. I was there when she passed away and stuff like that. And afterwards, someone said to me, "Ooh, aren't you freaked out? Your mom died and the ghosts." And I said, "Well, no, my mom loved me. She wouldn't hurt me in life. Why would she freak me out
exactly.
and hurt me in as a ghost in afterlife? That doesn't make any sense to me, you know?" So that what I bring to my mom's situation is that, yeah, this I love my mom, and her ghost wouldn't hurt me, and I actually embrace the idea of her spirit being around in the house, and yeah.
We always say, you know, we always talk to spirits or energy as we would talk to a normal person. You don't go into somebody's house and saying, "Talk to me.
Yeah.
Show me yourself." You go in and you be respectful and just talk to them as if they were a normal person. I mean, you know, it just kills me when people are very aggressive and what's the word I'm trying to think of, Joe? Confrontational. To spirits. They were human. They were beings mm-hmm. once. You know, you don't just yell at them all the time. Like, show yourself. And they don't come on command.
Do you guys talk to ghosts a lot? Spirits?
Sometimes, yes.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
We do a lot of investigating. And, you know, Joe's very skeptical, and he thinks he has a ghost repellent around him because
yes,
they
do.
Don't like to come around him.
They don't.
But, you know, as you do that, you just find that, you know, we're all chasing, we're trying to figure out what happens after we pass. My feeling is we're just energy. Your energy, I'm energy. There's energy on the other side.
But that is interesting because we are all made of energy at the subatomic level. And that's, spirits are made of energy. And like you heard the voice, and we talked about this before, is people hear noises, they hear voices and stuff, but other people that are standing next to them don't hear it. So it's almost like they're astral projecting that into our minds. And in order to make a sound, you know how it is, what happens when sound is made, the air is moved in a certain way, and for people to hear an audible sound, think of the energy that it takes for that spirit to make that sound. Like I said, with the way that they astral project it into people's minds, it goes to a whole new level of what are they? What's your opinion of a spirit? What do you think they actually are? Do you think that they're a physical being? Do you think that they're on another plane? Like, you know, talk about parallel universes and that.
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to be coy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that they are an energy form in some way. But, spirits. I mean, I truly believe that there are these things called spirits.
Yeah.
So I lived in New Mexico for many years, as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of Native Americans, you know, and there's all spirituality. And, Native Americans often, I mean, to generalize, you know, they view the world as being made up of different types of spirits, you know, nature spirits. There's the river and the rocks and the forest and animals and so forth. And I guess it's, you know, what I said earlier, it's sort of what you want to bring to the table on this. And if that makes sense to your worldview, then who's to argue with that?
Exactly.
Right? And it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Personally, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know there are skeptics who are like, absolutely not. Rock's a rock and stream's a stream and let's dam it up and bulldoze the rocks.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Native American. And then I'm looking at your card of where you have oral histories. You know, with the Native Americans, they didn't have a written language. Everything was oral history. Tell us a little bit about how you incorporate the oral history into your show.
Yeah, so I actually come out of the veterans oral history space. I've been doing that for many, many years, recording veterans from World War II to current day veterans. And I've done, non-veterans oral histories. And, you know, those oral histories are really someone's personal account, you know. So when you interview somebody, you're really getting their personal account. So in some of the work that I do, the oral history work is that first person subjective take on, you know, a given topic. And in a sense, I mean, that's about as good as it gets, I think, you know. Because, I mean, the historians will figure it out. They'll triangulate the data. But someone's experience, just like a ghost story, right?
Yeah.
Who's to deny that someone didn't see that apparition or feel that presence or have the hair go back on the back of their necks go up or, you know, whatever. Who's to deny that? Mm-hmm. So when people tell us through their oral histories, you know, that's a very powerful testament to experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for stopping by. This was awesome talking to you. I know you got to get back to your booth and the place is filling up. So, like I said, thank you. Thank you. And we'll put a link in the show notes, but tell everybody where they can get a hold of you if they want to or not. And when can they listen to your show?
Well, thanks, Joe. The socialvoiceproject.org is our website. And so our whole podcast network is on there. And you'll see Tony Livorno's podcast on there and many others. We've got a lot of projects in development. We're doing reviving old radio theater stuff. And
I love that.
We do a podcast around addiction. And we work with the local library and things like that. So, but if you go to the socialvoiceproject.org, you'll be able to see all that sort of stuff. And thank you for having me on.
Oh, it was awesome. And we'll talk to you all day.
Great. Thanks.
Thank
come,
you.
Come back and see us.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. And joining us right now is Patty Wilson. Hello, Patty.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I was listening to your talk, and you were talking about paranormal forensics.
Yeah, it's a concept that was created by Catherine Ramsland, who's an author, and she teaches teaches forensics. And Mark Nesbitt, who's a historian and author of The Ghost of Gettysburg, is what everybody knows him for in the paranormal world. And the idea was that after the CSIs leave, how do psychics or people who are sensitive or ghost hunters go in and pick up more information that might be useful? So taking the paranormal to the science.
Oh, yeah, that's so interesting. And lots of times us as paranormal investigators, we don't think about the forensic side of it. We just want to see the ghost, you know?
Exactly.
And it's interesting because it's almost like the spirits are there to solve their own murders or something like that.
Yes, they will solve their murders, answer questions, clarify, and sometimes they need help to be crossed over. So we do a little bit of all that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I was thinking of, we hear a lot of times that the spirits don't know that they passed away. Is that something that is actually true, that they can't understand that they passed?
At times, yes. I mean, there are people that their death was sudden or it's confusing. You find that particularly on battlefields or in horrendous accidents, and then you have to kind of break the news to them.
Oh, okay. All right.
Pat, give us a little bit about your background and how you got into
field. I hold a master's in psychology. I have written about 27 books on the paranormal, and I kind of was born into it. I didn't realize that until I was an adult, and I spent a lot of time running away from all of that. I wrote about the paranormal, but I didn't talk about being sensitive. I'm really shy of the word psychic because it always looks like, to me, in my head, I always see fat ladies in caftans with crystal balls, you know? Yeah. And that's not what it is, and I don't see all know all.
So what sparked this for you? Was there a certain incident that happened that said, I have to open myself up and start writing, or was it a gradual progression?
Oh, I knew from the time I was a little girl that I was going to write. I knew by the time I was 12, I found the books of Elliot O'Donnell, who is a third-generation ghost hunter from England at the turn of the 20th century, and I'm like, I want to tell stories like he did. And the psychic or the sensitive end of it was really an accident. I was with Mark and Carol Nesbitt at a site listening to a woman who said she was psychic, and she was telling them a whole line of tripe about what was going on there, and I could see the guy, I could hear the guy, and he was saying exactly the opposite of what this woman was telling them. Out of frustration, I leaned over and whispered to Carol, that's not true, and I said what was true, and she looked at me startled and said, oh my God, you can see them. And I lied, shook my head, and realized what I did. I said, no, just a little. And she started to laugh, and she said, no, you can see them. And then after that, she and Mark kind of drug me kicking and screaming into it. Like, he outed me on public national radio and started taking me to sites and saying, you're going to do the psychic thing. You're going to do this. You're going to tell us what's going on. And that's how I kind of learned to get comfortable in my own skin.
Oh, okay.
When you are in the presence of spirits, do you physically see them or do you sense them? How do you...
Rarely do you physically with your eyes see them. Okay. It's usually in your mind's eye, but you sometimes just sense them, sometimes you hear them, sometimes you feel them, and there's something that I call the psychic download, which is they somehow sometimes will just let you know. It's a knowing you know, but you can't tell how you know.
Okay,
that sounds interesting.
It was like a computer being booted up, you know, and all of a sudden you just, poof, all that information's there, and you're like, oh, okay, so that makes sense. Now I can tell you what's going on.
Okay.
So when you open yourself up and these spirits come forward, are you able to keep the more negative spirits away from you, or do they all come towards you, whether it's somebody who just passed or looking to get a message or something darker?
Yes, they all come towards you, but the and I've actually dealt with cases where you're doing house cleansings, blessings, and dealing with demonics, but they're a totally different class of entity than ghosts, and they have separate sets of rules, and I don't advertise a lot about it, but I do a lot of work with people who are struggling with those particular issues. And the best I can explain to you is that there are certain people that are protected or have a bubble around them of energy, and I'm one of those people because I have enough positivity and angel energy around me to work with this stuff and not let it come home with me.
Do you have a particular spirit guide that works that you work with or... that guide you?
I do not. Two of my sons have spirit guides, but I do not. There are some people who've crossed that work with me. Believe it or not, my father's first wife, Ruth, who passed away when my brothers were little, sometimes she'll come to me and she'll come to my girlfriend, who's also psychic, and tell her things I need to know, and I don't know, I'm not hearing her for some reason. But other than that, no, I use my gut instinct and I just follow where I'm led.
When you're communicating with the spirits, I don't know if this will sound right, but can they tell you the future, or can they? It's a tough question, because I remember during your speech you were saying, no, I don't know the lottery numbers, no, I don't. And we get that a lot where we talk to the different psychics. They always keep getting the same question of, well, in the future, what's going to happen to this, which that? And some of them say the answers and some of them don't. And when you mentioned that the spirits can only tell you what they know, that brought up some really interesting questions.
Yeah, I don't see the future, hear the future, and ghosts, dead people, they cannot tell you the future. They don't know it any more than I know it or you know it. they do show with you, share with you what they do know, which is whatever happened in their lives, what they're seeing, what they're witnessing, but they're not omnipotent. And that's a misnomer. And one of the things I listen for when I listen to different people who say they're sensitives is I listen for what I call the bullshit, pardon my French, but it is. Mm-hmm. It's nobody knows everything. If your grandma didn't know something before she died, she is not suddenly going to be able to do it and tell you answers to questions. I quite frequently have people come and say, I want to know if I should marry Joe Smith, or I want to know if I should buy this house or whatever, and I need to talk to my grandma or my pap or my dad or whoever. They don't have your answers.
Okay.
These are free will questions.
Okay. Yeah, because I was trying to ask, think about how to ask the question, but it was like there's so many aspects to it, I couldn't just come out and say, do they know the future,
Yeah.
But I've never thought about that, because we're under the assumption that, okay, when spirit passes, they go to this place and everything's revealed to them. But what the way you're describing it is they don't. They only know what is known to them.
When you listen to people talk about having died, they don't say that they get to know everything. They talk about a life review.
Okay.
It's their life's review.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't make them, all knowing. Mm-hmm. They aren't going to suddenly know who's going to win the Super Bowl next year or the lottery numbers or if you should have bought that house.
Yeah.
It's just their life is reviewed, and then they answer for that.
Okay. Okay.
Tell us a little bit of some of the other books that you've written. The topics. I love books, so I'm like, tell me all about your books.
Mark and I wrote Haunted Pennsylvania. I wrote a book called Haunted Pennsylvania years earlier by myself, and Haunted West Virginia, North Carolina. We've written two books in the Cursed series, which are like Cursed in the Carolinas, Cursed in Pennsylvania, that kind of thing, looking at curses and their impact in the paranormal community. I'm currently working on a book called Paranormal Porn, which will be out hopefully next summer. And it's a funny title, and there's a lot of laughter you can put with it, but it really started out with a very serious topic, and that is, if you're being sexually attacked by ghosts or demons, who do you tell? Ghost hunters can't fix this for you because they don't function in that world. Ghosts and demons function in totally different realms. They have different sets of rules. You go tell a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and they're just going to assume you're insane. Mm-hmm. And so I actually interviewed a couple people who had survived this, and that was the thrust of their conversation is, I was so alone. Nobody talks about this. Nobody writes about this. I didn't know who to talk to. So I decided to put this book out and go from the salacious to the very, very serious issue of what happens to you when you're all alone and being raped by a spirit.
Sure. And, in real life and in the spirit life, there's a stigma of shame with that. And, it's great that you're talking about it and bring that to the forefront, because there really is no outlet for somebody to go and get help with that.
There isn't. And it's even more shameful when it's spiritual or ghost related, because now you have the psychological issue. If a woman walks into a police department and says, I've been raped, and she's got the physical biological issues, they believe her. But I have met women who have had physical biological issues, tearing, bleeding, bruising, which we would look for in the physical world, and because there was no human attached to it, they said, oh, you did this to yourself.
It's sad that really is happening out there right now. How can someone protect themselves from something like that happening, or if it starts to happen, what can they do to prevent it from happening again?
Well, if it's two different issues. If it's a ghost or if it's a demonic, there's two different issues at play. So you have to address those particular issues. Most often you're going to end up having to find a good demonologist, Johnny Zaffis, people like that, and their exorcist team that will come in and assist you. Quite often, priests and ministers will not touch this subject, or it'll get worse if that you go and try to attempt to get help from them. It's almost like a punishment from the spirit. So you have to find the right people, get the right advice, and follow through the process. It's still not going to be painless. And then you have to deal with the PTSD that's going to come afterward, because you're going to always be traumatized.
And that's, to me, I'm thinking, that is even more traumatizing because it's not a physical person that you can blame.
Yep, you can't lock your door against them.
No,
that's the problem.
That's what
I remember this one woman that I interviewed, and she said, I would get up and go to the couch, and it would reach through the inside of the couch and get me. I'd feel it moving through the upholstery.
Okay.
And she would go to another room, and it would do it again. And it was it's the mental issues that it enjoys the most, that fear, that helplessness, that it's showing you. that no matter where you go, no matter what happens, even if you leave the house, mm-hmm. I will follow you.
Yeah, you could be in the supermarket doing your regular groceries, and then this thing would attack you, and which leads to even more trauma because it's in public.
And you cannot say or do anything but just simply walk away, get back to the car, suffer through it, and go home. But mm-hmm. most of the time it happens, like with this woman, it started out with, it presented as a child, and it got the maternal instincts. Demons aren't stupid. They know you're not going to want a demon in the house, but you may say, oh, you poor little child spirit, you died in this house. Please stay here. And once you've given that permission, then they got you.
Yeah.
And how would just a regular person who has not maybe been in the paranormal or very familiar with it be able to determine the difference between an actual spirit or ghost of a child and something that's mimicking a child?
Well, there are tells that we listen for. You may not be able to, first of all. And if you can, you're going to be looking for things like every demon has, and it's a rule. I don't understand why it's a rule, but it has always followed through. They will have some deformity, a lisp, an eye that's whited over, a limp. Something's going to be wrong. And it's like, it's almost like a God saying, no, 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 you can't make a perfect human. No. So this is a tell that we're going to look for.
Good. That's good to know, because you just, you know, we've been in so many different locations, and, you know, I'm always fearful that if we do encounter something like that, that it may be something, right. You know, trying to attach yourself. Have you ever had anything attach to yourself or come home with you, or what do you do to prevent that as well?
Mostly I don't have that problem, but there have been a couple times. There was a spirit of a Native American man who came home with me. He was not bad. He just scared my kids because they didn't like him being there and they were little. And it was not an opportunity to be able to explain it to them at that point. So I took him back where he came from and explained to him he had to stay put. He was easy. I had one instance. I've done like 9 cleansings, exorcisms, whatever you want to call them, not full-blown exorcisms, but simple exorcisms where the person was under oppression, not possession. And in one of them, because it was some college girls, and this thing was going from one to the other and just kept creating havoc, and it also, in that case, presented as a little girl. And in that instance, it presented to a college girl whose sister had Down syndrome, so it presented itself using the deformity as a way to wheedle itself in, because she had an empathy for children with Down syndrome because her baby sister had it, and that was what got the invitation to stay. And in that instance, it attached to me, and it took 24 to 48 hours for my team. I have a team, and I went home and I didn't go to my house. I sat in my car all night. I knew it was there. I could feel it moving, and I just sat in the car and cried the whole night, and the next morning went to one of my teammates and said, it didn't leave, it's inside of me, and I need your help, and I'm afraid to go into your house, and I don't know if you want me in there. And he called, we have a priest that we work with sometimes, and the rest of the team, and we began the process of getting it all out of me.
That's very interesting, because we hear of people that keep saying, I hear voices, I feel different, I look, you know, I look in the mirror, I don't see myself. It could be an attachment that they picked up, because a lot of people that we deal with go into these locations and are saying, come talk to me, come, you can use my body, you can do this. And then they don't say their prayers when they leave the building, saying, you know, you can't follow me, stuff like that. But some of these entities or demons can be so strong that even saying, you're not allowed to follow me, they'll be like, whatever.
Right. And another thing people don't realize is that we talk about demonic oppression, possession, but we don't talk about the fact that most of the time what it is a spirit oppression or possession. In other words, a person who was once alive who is now dead, a ghost in classic definition, who tries to force their way into another human being and ride that body, either temporarily part-time or full-time. And in order to do so, it pushes that person's spirit to the side. There is some really interesting anecdotes on this subject by a psychologist named Dr. Edith Fury in one of her books. She was a classical regular psychologist who encountered this phenomena and actually writes about her introduction to it and what she did with it. So, you know, in scientific terms, there is some data from psychologists. There's at least 2 others that I know of who've written about the subject and have had to work their way through the issues that ghost had in order to get it to release from the human being so the person could become whole again.
Do you believe if spirits can attach to objects?
Yes.
Some people do, some people don't. I just wonder how you feel about that.
Oh, I mean, I do believe it. And the reason I do believe it is because we've encountered them. I have a friend who had a cannonball that she found in West Virginia on a private property. And in West Virginia, she took it home and left it on her dresser. And from that point forward, her teenage daughter was having horrible problems. She finally called me up and said, take the cannonball. I can't deal with it. I went down, picked it up, and once it got north of the Mason-Dixon line, it was quiet. It never bothered. It's now in John Zaffis's museum of possessed possessions, okay? And I also have a clown, same woman purchased, that has a Loki, an earth spirit, attached to it. And so, yeah, they can. Why they do it, I'm not sure, but they can do it.
We were having this discussion about dolls because they look childlike. They look like the human form. That would it be more easy or maybe prevalent for something that's a darker spirit to attach to something that looks like the human form? Say, for example, you go and you buy an antique doll, or you know, you maybe buy one at a garage sale or something. Would a spirit be more likely to be in something that people like are looking at and admiring? Like, you know, a lot of people collect dolls or you know, baby dolls versus maybe a vase.
Right. I don't think that the doll's human image itself is going to be the defining factor. I think it's the amount of energy the people put into it. So if it's a picture and people, you know, really loved that picture and it was passed down, or if it's a doll that was really, really loved, or a teddy bear or whatever. But I've seen haunted grandfather clocks and knickknacks and musical instruments, and it's where that person's passion had lain in life.
Can we switch gears and ask a few questions about your forensic?
Sure.
And helping out? You work with different law enforcement agencies?
Well, we are kind of defining it now. So we had actually had a group of people come in who were paranormal investigators first, and we went through the process trying to hone how we do it, and then we went and did it another time with mostly police officers and coroners and stuff. And the whole idea was to learn what they needed from us. Mm-hmm. And we're still working on defining it at this point, but they need facts. They don't need just the emotion. The emotion's important sometimes, but we can't get caught up in that. With my job, I have to tell them, this is what I see, this is what I hear, this is what I feel, and then leave it and not try to interpret it, because I might send them in the wrong direction.
And when you do this, do you feel them? Do you see them? Or, like, I understand on your speech, you said that you saw through their eyes. Could you explain that?
Well, and there's different ways I do it, but when I see through their eyes, I literally see through their eyes.
Okay.
What they saw is what I see. What they felt is what I'll feel. So I feel the fear. I feel the being pushed around or the rattled or the stabbed or whatever it is that happens to them. I get it too. And I physically see the things that they saw. So in my mind's eye, if they're looking at a tree, I see the tree. I don't know why the tree is important, but I'm looking at a tree.
When you go through that process, how do you physically deal with that? Because does it drain you emotionally and physically to sense that?
It does, and it hurts physically sometimes. But it's almost like there's a degree of separation. You do what you have to do, you get through it, but you know that it's not your pain and it's not your emotion. So there's also that little bit of separation, and you keep that there as your buffer so you're not, you know, hurt too badly. There are times it gets past you, but as a whole, that's what you do to try to protect yourself. You try to remember, this isn't mine, this is somebody else's, and I got to go through this to get to the answers.
And what kind of answers have you come and brought and presented to law enforcement in your investigation?
Well, as I said, we're honing this process. So what we did is we picked a cold case and we worked our way through it. And in this case, we knew who did the crime. We didn't know why they did the crime or how they did the crime. And so the information we got was the reasons that they murdered the people that were murdered. And it made sense to the police officers in context with the time frame, the area they were in, stuff that they had not thought about looking at, and how they were killed. I gave the physical feelings that these children had experienced, and that made sense in the context of the coroner's reports. Oh yes, there was only mild petechial hemorrhaging. That would have meant, yeah, that's a possibility. And so they're honing on down, because they did not know the cause of death. It was a little bit mysterious, but whenever we finally came down to it, we figured out the how that their face had been held down, their noses pinched shut, and I did it in such a way with something over their hand that it did not leave the bruising that they had been anticipating. And that's why they couldn't figure out what it was.
Okay. And when you do this, do you have to be on the location where the crime took place?
No, that's a misnomer. That's a modern idea of ghost hunting, and it's spawned cottage industry and ghost hunting in different places and people just loving to go ghost hunting, and I do that myself. But you can sit in your living room and talk to the dead, and they'll come to you. You have to focus on them, their energy. When I do a reading, which I don't often do, I ask for an object and a picture. But if I have a picture, or if I'm told who to talk to, I will just kind of open up my energy and say, I want to talk to Sally Smith. And eventually I'll get a voice and I'll know Sally's there.
Okay.
And if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or get a copy of your book, where would they do that?
The books you can get on Amazon.com under Patty A. Wilson. I have a Facebook page, and they're more than welcome to talk to me there.
Okay. Well, I see that the speakers are getting ready again, so thank you for stopping by.
Oh, thank you so much for
having
me.
It's an honor to speak to you.
I appreciate it.
So interesting. Thank you very much. Again, everybody, it's Patty Wilson.
Patty A. Wilson, yes.
Patty A. Wilson. Please check her out, and thanks again for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. So, what'd you think of this convention?
What an incredible day. Amazing. I saw some things here that, you know, like vendor-wise, that I haven't seen at any other convention.
Yeah.
But we really haven't focused too much on the UFO and Bigfoot side of it. We've always been in the, like, ghost side of it. And I just love it. I'm going to spend all my money here.
Yeah. What's nice is that we're actually in the room with the speakers, so we sat and listened to the speakers and learned a lot.
Yeah, that's... You know, one of the important things is, yes, is come and look and shop, but you're also getting so much knowledge of, you know, people in the paranormal, in the Bigfoot world, in the UFO world.
And that's the thing, too, is every time we go to these conventions, we can never hear the speakers. But the opportunity that we had today was we could actually listen to all the speakers. And,
yeah.
You know, like you say, you come and you get educated on a lot of the stuff that you don't know about, and this is where you learn. You got to come to these conventions.
Yeah, come out and see us, meet us, greet us.
All right, well, thanks for a great day. Thank you, Butler, Pennsylvania, for an awesome event.
Amazing job, everybody.
We had a blast all day long, and we will be here next year, definitely.
Definitely, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, so let's leave them with a little bit of crud.
Detroit rock and roll. Check them out.